This podcast is brought to you by The Province.
The Province Sports Podcast. After a one-week hiatus, the PatCast is back. A presentation of Eagle Ridge GM and Coquitlam, proud sponsors of the BCHL Coquitlam Express, and your number one overall pick for selection and inventory. Check them out weekdays or weekends in Coquitlam, two blocks west of Coquitlam Center, 2595 Barnett Highway, or visit them online, eagleridgegm.com. Botch, did you miss me?
I did. I needed you. You took the worst week, I think, that you could potentially have chosen to be off. Like, I need, you know, I've made this a point as long as we've connected on the PatCast here and before that, that, you know, I'd love your question work, whether it's to the coach, whether it's to the GM, whether it's to the president. I really am often in admiration in how you can disarm people with really, when you break it down, they're really brutal questions, but no one ever seems to be offended by them. I don't know how you pull it off. Like, I'll get, you know, not by Willie, but other people will call me and say, like, you know, that wasn't a reasonable question or this, although I do have a Willie story of something that went down at his press conference. But for the big weeks of the year, there's certain times I need you by my side, and you weren't there for Trevor, you weren't there for Jim, and you weren't there for Willie, and it let me down.
Well, as you know, I had laid this out that sometimes plans, life gets in the way of these things, right?
Yeah, that's
my excuse this time around. But I hadn't departed the morning of our departure. Willie got let go, so was out at the airport. I was listening intently as Trevor and Jim did their exit.
You heard it?
Yeah, and I've gone back and
on
the radio.
Yeah, and you watched it.
Yeah, and I've gone back and. Yeah, it didn't seem like there was a whole lot there from the players, maybe something that I missed. But the one that fascinated me was Willie Desjardins electing, you know, he didn't have to come out and say his goodbyes, but right. I wasn't surprised that he did. But what really stood out at me was, and again, the Canucks facilitated it in their rink, but at that point, you know, he's no longer one of them. We are all Canucks except the guys that get fired.
Yeah.
Right? So he's not part of the group, but they still offered him the chance to do his goodbyes at the podium.
That's
right. But we're so conditioned to, you know, the Canuck logos behind him. And I was just blown away by the blackness, the darkness, the, you know, he was just enveloped in the black shroud of you don't belong here anymore, basically.
Yeah. If you ever go to the fair, like a fair or the PNE, they have those trailers that are like the House of Horrors, and you bring your kid in and it's all black curtains and like dudes pop out of it. And that was almost like Willie popping out of that, and you know, I thought he did extremely well. Like, he really connected with people emotionally, which I don't think he did a lot of in the first, well, in his entire time. And certainly, I think that Trevor failed in the reaction I got around the NHL was that, you know, that was one of the worst, like, Trevor Linden performances. I'm the leader, PR moments. He just didn't look comfortable. He didn't, like, you know, pull at heartstrings. He didn't feel rah-rah, like, we're ready to go with this guy. And, you know, avoiding the word rebuild, it just looks ridiculous for the entire organization. But what you didn't see, though, with Willie was that his wife was there.
Well, I heard him say that, and he was glad because he said she was there at the introductory press conference right. When I was hired, and the cameras didn't pan and show her, but he said, glad she's there. And he talked about, you know, how difficult it's been on his family of late. And then he went on the long list of thank yous. And again, you know, maybe it's the cynic in me. It's what we do for a living. But just reading between the lines of the people that got thanked, some got thanked more than others. Some got thanked longer than others. Some, like Rick Celebrini, my goodness,
that
the defense there.
That was super weird. Okay. Like, no, most people don't know, most fans don't know who Rick Celebrini is or what he does. Rick Celebrini has been kind of criticized a couple of times. I remember you brought it up with Matt one time on the air and I was listening, and that got shot down immediately. We've talked about it a few times on the PatCast, and I wrote about it one time. in the provies, not even for the paper. And for him to have that full-throated defense of celebrating, like sticking his flag in the ground, this is the guy that, you know, this is important, he's been unduly, unfairly criticized, was super weird. And when juxtaposed to how little he talked about Trevor, I found the whole thing just like, it was like a read-between-the-lines festival. It was just like ongoing read between the lines.
For the rest of my life, if I find an injured person, I'm going to bring him. From far afield, I'm going to bring him to Rick Celebrini.
Yeah, he'll be coaching the Panthers. Something will happen.
He'll go overseas and coach again, but he'll ship guys back to Vancouver. Yeah.
So his wife is there, and she was like clapped a couple times or something like that. But then and during it, he brought up the media.
Yeah.
Talked about how, you know, tough but fair we were. And I was thinking, you know, who's really tough? Who's been tough on him in the meet? I think, you know, obviously I have and you have. And like Blake, I guess. Like, I'm not sure that the media is as tough as some people paint it as. Like, first of all, there's just not a lot of us writing about the team or talking about the team. And Dave Pratt, he super can be tough on coaches. But there's like four or five of us that generally can, you know, be really tough on a head coach, I guess. And, but he made the point, which he's made to me several times in like, very casual conversations, that, you know, things are tough and people criticize him. Sometimes they actually thinks about things and sometimes they're right. But he's never thought that he was mistreated. And, so then the press conference ends and I can hear, like, I'm over on one side where we're asking the questions and I can hear Rhonda, who is his, I later found out, is his wife. I knew that was his wife, and I could hear her saying, "I've got to meet Jason. I've got to meet Jason." And then at that point, I'm like, "Oh fuck! Like, what is going to happen to me? Like, this is not good." Because I had been, especially as the season went on, I've been kind of calling Willie out, especially on we're competing every night.
Right.
When in reality, the Canucks were the worst team in hockey from January 21st on. So when I hear a loved one that I've been criticizing, wanting to meet me, good thoughts are not jumbling in my head. So I kind of just turn around and walk outside the room and think, well, I mean, she's going to find me. I'm not going to go and, you know, put my hand up and say, come meet me. So finally that she asks, you know, the right people, and they say, yeah, Jason's right over there. And I can see her taking a beeline right over to me. And she goes, "You're Jason." And I said, "Yeah." And she says, I wanted to meet you. I'm Rhonda. Pause. Desjardins. And I'm like, okay, like, nice to meet you. I want you to know I read the provies. And I want you to know my kids read the provies. Like that. And I'm thinking, oh, shit. Like, this is going to end really badly here. Like, what's gonna happen to me? Because there's cameras everywhere, there's media everywhere. Like, whatever happens in the next 2 minutes, if it's bad, everyone's gonna know about it. And then she says, I just think that you're really, and I'm thinking, like, despicable, distasteful, an asshole. Like, what are you gonna say? And I could, like, she's agitated and shaking a bit, and I'm getting prepared for a slap or something like that. I want you to know you're really clever.
Oh!
I think your writing's really clever.
Oh.
Yeah, but this was condescending. This was not a compliment at all. This was her taking the high road, but letting me know that what she needed to let me know. And I didn't know what to say to that. Like, I thought for a moment, I don't know what the right call was. Like, I thought for a moment, like, okay, you're being sarcastic with me and condescending, but like, what do I say? Like, I've talked, like, Willie has talked, if Willie had a problem with me, he had tons of opportunities to tell me that over the years. Like, we have been just through circumstance. We've been out in Vancouver at night. We've run into each other socially a couple of times. He had opportunities to say, and even at the rink, he's pulled me aside. And every time he said the same thing, like, I really like your questions, which I've said before, put incredible pressure on me. And I think you're you know, tough or whatever, but it's been fair. And that's the way he's always left it. So I for a second there, I said, do I tell Rhonda this, my relationship with her husband?
Well, or Rhonda.
Do I just let this go? And I just let it go.
Aww. And that's it? Like, you didn't go for lunch to patch up your differences?
No, it would not have. I don't think lunch. If that conversation was extended for any amount of time, it would not have ended well.
Well, for what it's worth, I think you're really clever too, Jason. So that makes two of us.
Condescending again. So
I'm not so sure about that. What about the players? So when they did their exit meetings, I went through it quickly. I mean, from afar, and I'm trying to follow from afar, most of it on Twitter, and it seemed like the big deal was Alex Edler had the gall to look at his phone while sitting at the podium. Like, that was it. From a season that was in the shitter, basically, from day one, and 82 games of it we have to put up with. The players get a couple of days off. They come, they sit, and they always do it by fours, which drives me nuts, but that's the way they want to trot them out, their year-end thing. And the big takeaway seemed to be, oh, well, Ryan Miller's open to coming back. And Alex Edler looked at his phone.
Yeah, I think there were a few things. One, the Sedins taking on all the, you know, doing what they always do, saying it's all on us. Miller being open to come back. The should Horvat being the captain, and he told me afterwards, like, look, I want no part of taking the C off Henrik if we're on the same team. Like, don't do it. And Edler, and I think Edler, I mean, this is a great topic. For here, it was one of the things I would have wanted to talk about on the podcast, because I feel for Alex, because we as a media do ignore him, and he's not as bad an interview as he's painted out to be. He's a very prominent player and has been for a long time. And for the course of the entire season, we collectively, all of us, ignore him. And he was asked one question. He's up there with the four guys, and this happens every year. And it was Farhan asking the question, and he pointed to me right after. He goes, that was for you, like to me, because I always kind of paint Farhan as the guy who doesn't like Edler. So he always steps up and he asks are you going to waive your no trade? Basically, he asks that every year. So I feel for Edler. Like, I don't think he's super comfortable talking in front of the media. I think that's part of the reason he's established it where he's not going to give us a lot, and certainly the reality is him not being comfortable means he's not saying, great witty comments all the time. So in turn, we don't bother talking to him or write stories about him. I can see it from two ways. One, if you're a player that prominent making that much money, like, why doesn't the media ever want to talk to me? I feel disrespected. Or two, like, I'm just super socially awkward and I'm not comfortable in these situations. So he's always up there with four people. And I forget who it was, but someone found... They tracked down all the Alex Edler final season post-game press conferences, and he's always looking down. Like, he's not looking at a phone. Like, that's just his resting face. Like, that's Edler's resting face. And I get it. If you're up on a stage, which is kind of what they are, on a podium with four people, and three of the people are being asked everything, you're just sitting there. No one's talking to you. I would look down too. I would feel like, where do I look? Do I look up? Do I look at this guy? Do I look at the mean? I don't know where to look. I look down. So, it's on us, really. I see Bouwmeester always interviewed all the time when he was on Calgary. He's way worse an interview than Edler. And we ignore him. And it's kind of disrespectful. And if he wants to look down through a season-ending press conference, so be it.
I do think over the years, he's done a masterful job of sort of creating this character that doesn't offer up much. And I find particularly for electronic media, like when I shove a microphone in his face, it becomes this natural barrier. I do find when I've talked to him for columns that I've written where, you're not thrusting your mic, give me an answer. and if you go in with a topic that he's willing to talk about, like his contract, that's something people have asked him throughout the season, and it's kind of been the same, right? He doesn't want to go there. He doesn't want to fan the flames. But I do find if you get him on a topic that, he's willing to talk about, he will open up. But you're right. I just find that over the years, I've kind of been disappointed. I've been let down with his responses. Now, some of that's probably on us as the questioners. If you come with better questions, then maybe you get better answers. But he has sort of created this buffer zone that if all things are equal, generally go to somebody else. But I think you made the point, too, at one point that, look, he's not Kevin Bieksa. He's not Willie Mitchell. And that room at one point, Dale Weiss, like, there were a bunch of, like, really good interviews, right? Guys that seemed to actually enjoy dealing with the media. They're all gone. Eddie Lack. Like, they're all gone. And so the bar of good interviews.
Conway.
I mean, this is just the whole, from day one this year, we've talked on almost every podcast about the bar being lowered in so many areas with the hockey club and the organization as a whole. And this is another.
Well, like, losing Burrows and Hants, it was kind of the death blow. That was kind of like, all right, now we're in Schitt's Creek here. Like, this is really, we're going to really have to work to get good quotes and good comments and good analysis from these guys, because they're not just going to cough it up. And a lot of those guys would just give you gold. Like, Burrows would pick his spots, but when he wanted to be on, he was fantastic. And Yannick Hansen was kind of the conscience for the team. And now there's just no one there. So Edler, to me, like, I look around that room and I'm like, Edler's not that bad right now, all things considered. Maybe I should be next year doing a lot of Alex Edler stories.
Well, that's because you got Tanev, who he's not great. Tramkin, we can't speak to. You know, a bunch of these young guys that haven't been around, haven't been part of any of this. You're right. Like, Edler, at this stage of his career, given what he's meant to this organization, he should be right there arm in arm with Daniel and Henrik. Like, right. I mean, they're the elder statesmen. And yet Daniel and Henrik dutifully do the media, and Edler, for the most part, you don't hear enough.
Like, and we're not asking for him, right? To represent the team.
No, I'm guilty. So. And I will admit, I'm guilty of that. So, from afar, that was it. That was my takeaway, that he apparently looked at his phone, but you're telling me that's not the case. So
he had no
phone.
It didn't sound like it didn't
miss much on the player exit day.
No, I don't think you missed anything from the players that I can think of. I mean, there's the issue when I brought it up with Horvat possibly being captain, but look, it's super early for that. And there's extreme pressure on Horvat just to, like, continue to do what he's doing. Like, you saw what happened at the end of the year, 17 games without a goal. It was really tough. Teams focus on him, absolutely. But you could see on those last few weeks how hard it's going to be for him in the next year and as the years come here, when he becomes increasingly the objective of other coaches. We got to shut down that Horvat line. And the more I just kept getting the feeling as the season rolled to the end, man, like, Horvat's going to have a really hard time leading this rebuild, and he's kind of the center of the rebuild. He's the guy that, interestingly, like, you know, Linden kept pointing out and saying, you know, we'll build around Stetcher, we'll build around Trampkin, and hey, look at Horvat. Like, you know, Horvat is by far head and shoulders the best among this current or kind of future core, the core that's going to be in 3 or 4 years. So he's got enough on his plate. I don't think that people should be so eager to putting the C on his jersey.
And I wrote about making him the captain at one point, probably in February. And my angle was, and I still believe this pretty firmly, like, I just don't know what kind of appetite Daniel and Henrik, but particularly Henrik as the captain, like, I think next year is going to be every bit as bad as this past one.
Right.
And so, you know, game in, game out, Henrik stands in there after these games
but
and
let
tries
him deal with it. Like, don't put it on the kid. Like, let Henrik. You don't think so? You don't think
Henrik doesn't have anything left to say. Like, there, and we saw that at the 60 game mark.
True.
And look, it's what happens on the ice that's important. It's not what happens.
But you know
after
that's the hardest part for all of these players, right? Like, Bieksa exit stage left after loss. Ryan Kessler nowhere to be found after loss. Burrows, you couldn't. Like, it was really hard. Like, I asked for him multiple times this season after losses, and he passed. He didn't want to come out and talk to the media. It is really difficult for these guys to compose themselves and to say what they think or what should be the right thing to the media after losses. I think it's going to you let Horvat some more time, as much time as possible, to wrap his head around how difficult that task is going to be. Henrik, at least, is super comfortable. Like, they're used to the losing by now. And you're right. Like, he doesn't say anything different. He puts, like, this big positive stamp on everything, which probably is what the team wants and prefers. And, you know, it's even difficult for him. It's got to be wearing on him to constantly be answering questions about the power play, but still ride that out. Like, that's the one advantage I can think of to keep. If you are bent on keeping the Sedins in Vancouver, at least let them deal with the lead, like, that part of it, the media part of it, especially after losing streaks and a lot of losses, and let the kids, you know, have a little bit of time here where they aren't exposed to that kind of pressure.
All right, we got 19 minutes in, and that's the first reference of kids, so we did pretty well. Yeah, I think so. I think so. The one thing I find curious, and look, it's a letter stitched on a uniform. it means more than that. I get it. But it's Crux, captain. It's a C, and it's stitched to the uniform.
Yeah.
Coaches are so disposable at this level, and we've seen it here in the last 2 weeks. Coaches come and go, but somehow you give a player a C and you stitch it on his jersey, and it's a lifetime commitment, or it's his until he no longer wants it. Like, this organization, to move forward, needs some real disruption. And I don't like the idea of stripping guys just for the sake of stripping them. But I do look around and I think if you're going to leave no stone unturned with the Vancouver Canucks, like, if you really truly want to move forward, like, there's got to be a few disruptive forces at play here in the offseason. Is a new captain, is that enough of one? Maybe it's not. But just to say, well, Henrik's always been the captain, he should remain the captain. Look, the San Jose Sharks went from Patrick Marleau to Joe Thornton. They've gone to Joe Pavelski. It may not be working for them right here, right now in this series against Edmonton, but Marleau and Thornton.
Pavelski wasn't 21, though.
No, he wasn't.
That's a huge, there's no, I looked at it when I did a bit of a story on this, and I looked at it, like, McDavid's the youngest captain, but you get, like,
sure,
he's a total outlier and totally different than anyone else. The only other young captain under 25 was Landeskog, and that's been a disaster in Colorado. And there is a time I would be here totally agreeing with you, saying, like, it's no big deal. Give him the C. Let's move forward. And then I saw what Luongo went through when he was captain, and I am convinced it wore on, like, it really mentally wore him down, and it was a pretty significant mistake, and I was for it. I said all the same things you're saying now, like, it can be changed. It's not that big a deal. It's only a letter. Like, who cares? He's the captain. Let him be the captain. We all know he's the leader of the team. This makes sense. But it became really difficult for him to speak for the team. And there was lots of times where the heat came down on him for things he said, and he wasn't prepared at that point in his career to mentally cope with all of that. And I think it impacted his play. And for me, like, the team's going nowhere. I'm all about what you're saying about disrupting the team. I would personally do it by trading the Sedins. But if the Sedins are here, let them deal with the leadership. That's just where I would come from.
And just to backtrack a little bit with Horvat, like, again, I think next year is going to be a real struggle for the Canucks to score goals. Like, yeah, you want to see some bumps from some of the younger guys, but you got a pretty good glimpse in those final 17 games for Horvat that if he, in fact, is your top line center next year, like, his point production could regress. Like, from the 20 goals and the 32 assists, like, if you think, oh, a young guy who had a good year, well, naturally he's going to develop more and there'll be a bump. And I know we'll get to the summer and the prediction of goal totals at some point. but as I sit here right now, and maybe this is me tipping my hand a little bit, like, I think next year, if he plays top line minutes against top opponents and shutdown guys, he's going to struggle to get back to 50 points.
One of the biggest jobs that the new coach is going to have, in my mind, is changing how people view Bo Horvat. Like, up until now, he's been seen as the defensive center. And I think he can be a fine two-way center in the NHL, but he's also your best chance to produce points moving forward, the best potential. Willie never put him in a prime spot to get points. Like, he was always on the second power play unit, didn't have the best goal scorers with him. I would have him on that first power play unit. I'd have him with the Sedin twins as much as possible on the power play. And I'd also, heavily change the way, like, a lot more offensive zone faceoffs, and I give Sutter all the D zone faceoffs. If that's the lineup, let Sutter suck up all the D zone. Like, what's the point of Sutter if he's not sucking up D zone faceoffs? And give Horvat as many opportunities as you can to give him a boost, give him a perk offensively, because you're right. It may be more difficult for him to hit 52 points than a lot of people are thinking. And you got to do everything in your power to give him a shot at overcoming that, knowing that all the top pairings are coming after him. Okay, so now you get a higher percentage of offensive zone faceoffs. Now you get better wingers. Now we're going to give you premium power play time. We're going to do things for you to build that confidence and make sure that you don't go from 52 to 48, that you go from 52 to 60.
PatCast is always a presentation of Eagle Ridge GM, where Truck Month continues here in April. Get up to $10,000, $500 off total value on the largest selection of Silverados and Sierras in stock. You'll find them online, eagleridgegm.com, for full details. Now, all this talk about the playoff push for the Utica Comets, the playoff push fell short, yes. Came to an end despite Goldie's best efforts. Goldie single-handedly tried to drag the Comets into the playoffs.
He scored, so he played two games, right? He scored four goals in three games.
I thought it was four and three, but...
Four and three, okay. Still, he scores the four goals with a cup of coffee down there, and I'm reading about people saying, but he's got to play gritty. Are you freaking kidding me? The Canucks are the second lowest scoring team in the past 2 years. They do not need a gritty winger. They don't need grit for a goal. Dobin, like, this is driving me crazy. They need this guy to score goals. He scores four. We should be all going, holy shit, like, this guy can score. Don't change a thing. Do exactly what you're doing now in the NHL. I can't believe, like, people are saying, well, like, I think it was the Utica GM I was seeing. Like, someone was, like, debating, you know, is he gritty enough? He's got to play grittier. Fuck that.
I saw a highlight.
Score.
No, I saw one of the highlights. Like, he gets, it was kind of like the debut goal he scored in LA. Like, he got behind the defense. He's on a breakaway. Like, who scored breakaways for the Vancouver Canucks this year? Who got breakaways for the Vancouver Canucks this year? Like, nobody.
I never heard anyone in Toronto saying William Nylander's got to play gritty. I've never heard of this. No, William Nylander has to be offensively dynamic, and he is. And that's what's leading the Leafs, or a big part of that franchise right now. Like, he's got to play. Shut up.
So the Canucks have been down for 10 days. Utica was finished on the weekend. If it was as simple as Travis Green's the next head coach of the Vancouver Canucks, it should probably be done by now. So now the Ralph Kruger name gets lobbed onto the fire as well. But I do find it a little curious that I don't think it's as simple as Travis Green. And I do think the Canucks have to do their due diligence here. But
do they? I mean, if it was Green, what's the point of due diligence? They'll just let him, give him the job.
Right. But the fact that he doesn't have it yet, and it's early in the process, but still, I think, like, you know, if the Canucks were afraid that he was going to go elsewhere, you know, they would have tripped all over themselves to make it happen. And it may still end up being Travis Green, but I do find it curious that, you know, a lot's been made about the three-headed rookies, Trevor, Jim, and Willie, you know, hiring a guy. And remember, Willie DeJardin was hired coming off an AHL championship. You know, the Utica Comets just flamed out and didn't make the playoffs.
I know, but have you seen the Utica Comets roster?
And I know he got them to the Calder Cup final a couple years ago. So there was some playoff success, just not this year.
4 years, got to one Calder Cup final on a bad team, on a not very good team. And this year is the one of the worst teams I've seen for a Canucks farm team maybe ever. Like, it was just a collection of never-was guys threaded to a couple of prospects, like Virtanen, who was a big letdown, and Demko, who was good, and Subban, who the Canucks don't believe can play in the NHL. It was a tire fire there. And for him to keep that team together and nearly get into the playoffs, I think is Travis Green's crowning achievement as a coach. So he did a nice job. He did a really good job. I'm not going to say a great, you know, unbelievable job, but he did a good job. And a lot of people think he's ready, but I tend to agree with you. If he was ready and if he was the guy, they would be announcing it now. I don't see the due diligence argument unless you doubt that Travis Green is the guy.
Yeah. And so the other part of that equation then, I guess, is, you know, to see what happens here with the first round, if there's a surprise exit by a playoff team that elects to make a coaching change, like who else becomes available and who's out there on the market? Because we've seen Vegas has done their hiring. Dallas went with Hitch. Like, those names quickly were, you know, Hitch was linked here shortly and Gerard Gallant was out there for a while. You know, in terms of candidates that are available, there aren't a ton. But if the first round comes and some teams get knocked out and there's an experienced guy, like, now it's my belief that most GMs are hired with the opportunity to fire a coach. And so the Canucks have played that card now and Willie's done. But then the pressure goes squarely on, if it wasn't already, but it goes on Jim Benning and Trevor Linden. Right. So are they going to hitch their wagon to another unproven, untested guy without NHL head coaching experience?
Yeah, Travis may not be Jim's guy, right? Like, and you know, I think a question to be answered is who is hiring the coach, right? Because a lot of us have made the point that we believe the Aquilinis had great influence in the Tortorella hire. And now, like, when I hear Kruger, like, to me, that's got Linden written all over it. Like, that's a Linden play. Like, it's just the motivational guy, the multi-sport guy.
Global, sort of this right. big vision.
Yeah, it just seems to me. And but Kruger's unproven. Like, that team, the Oilers, I mean, that wasn't some great team. I mean, they were okay. In that lockout shortened season, they were under 500 after 48 games. If you stopped this season after 48 games, Willie would have looked pretty good. So I don't necessarily think that that was some phenomenal job he did, making the Oilers look a little bit less than average, like, you know, compared to the disaster they usually are. Like, it was decent. He did okay. And the game changes. It changes, can change pretty rapidly. And now we're 4 years on and he's been out of the NHL doing soccer stuff and stuff.
Right. I mean, his performance at the World Cup, I guess, at the time, people thought, oh, well, this is going to be a terrific, you know, brochure for.
That's true. And he didn't, and everyone keeps making the point he didn't, he's the bench piece.
Who, of course, yeah, who may not be here. And of course, Hansen's no longer here. The two Canucks that were on that Team Europe, you know, so there aren't any real ties. Well, we'll see what happens with Spezza in the expansion draft, you know, which is what, just a couple months from now. Draft lottery coming up at the end of the month. And I don't know, you don't play the simulator.
I don't do the simulator. No. You, like, I don't even believe it simulates what really happens. How, like,
I don't know. I don't write the program, so I don't.
Yeah, I'm not even convinced.
I will admit I did,
like,
it once.
I hear people do it. They send me and they do it 15 times, and the Canucks are never in the top two.
I did it
How's
once.
That possible?
I did it once, and the Canucks did land the top pick.
Oh, they did?
And I thought,
oh, wow. Okay.
Like,
so maybe this is.
I walked away at that point. Like, there's not a whole lot
Mic
more.
Mic drop.
I guess. Not that it has any implications whatsoever on what happens with the ping pong balls on April 29th, but that's the next big. Well, no, I shouldn't say it's the next big day because they may hire a coach before then, right?
Right. Like, yeah. I mean, if it's Travis, it's got to be soon, right? Like, you would think that it's got to be announced, if not this week, then for sure next week. And if it goes beyond then I think that it is weird. But I remember the rumors being about Willie for a while. Before he was hired, and it took them some time before they announced it. And then we kind of later found out it was always going to be Willie, just like it was always going to be Jim that they were bringing in to hire these guys.
Yeah. They've been pretty predictable in some of their big moves. Like, they didn't get Lucic, but you knew if they didn't get Lucic that Louis Erickson was plan B. And sure enough, that happened.
Ryan Miller, same thing.
Yeah, exactly.
The GM getting Benning. Everyone knew Benning was coming. Willie was pretty high on the list right away. And then by the time he was hired, it was, oh, yeah, of course, they're bringing in DeJordan.
So, you know, I still think there's a pretty good chance it could be Travis Green. But I just, you know, if it goes much longer here, it does certainly open to speculation of, as you said, who's making the hiring decision. Is there consensus? And, you know, Travis Green gets a say in this too. Like, he might look at the opportunity here and think, man, that team is going nowhere fast if there are other teams out there. And again, if other teams decide to fire the coach at the end of the first round, you know, might that open some doors for a guy like Travis Green, who has been close and has been interviewed before. So
you may only get one shot. And if he really is the hot shot next guy, he may have opportunities to pick a spot. But you come to the Canucks, it may be the only opportunity you have to be a head coach in the NHL.
All right, what's the, in your mind, what's the big story in round one of the playoffs? Is it the Leafs?
Yeah, I think the, you know, obviously it's hard to turn your back on Nashville beating the Hawks and being up 3-0. But the Leafs, like, it's been dead even. Like, it's been an even series. And Babcock is out coaching Trotz by a significant margin. They have this, like, that defense is led by Riley and Gardner playing 25, 26 minutes a game. Like, how are they doing this? But I think in a lot of ways, especially from the Vancouver perspective, the Leafs are the story. They have rebuilt that thing in a relatively short period of time since Shanahan got there and they got committed to the rebuild. So it should show the Canucks that it doesn't need to take 5 years. If you do it right, you surround yourselves by the right people. They also have built a 2017 team, right? Like, it's a really, it's not a great defense, but they all skate really well. They transition the puck really fast. They don't have it a long time in their own end. They don't have these big slow guys like Branson and even Trampkin. They've moved away from that. And up front, they're speed guys. Like they're a really fast, skilled team. They've drafted for skill. They've picked guys who are fast. And I think that that is a, they are the quintessential model right now on how to rebuild a franchise. And if the Canucks, they've also done things like weaponizing their salary cap space to get certain guys. And if you're the Canucks, I think you do better off modeling what's next, like the next steps after like the Leafs. Like I don't believe, like a lot of people are saying, Canucks have done. They've traded all their veterans. Hang on. Let's see where they draft. But other than that, there's nothing they can do. No, there's a ton of shit the Canucks can do. Like they can sign. They don't need to, like to me, the Erickson contract is crazy. Like when you sign veterans, sign them with movable contracts. Otherwise, don't even bother.
But as you say, like you know, the Leafs are showing how quickly it can be done, except that you can't go back in time, Botch. And I think to myself, like I watch these playoffs now. The Canucks aren't in them. So I start to think and I try to figure out where the baseline is and where the Canucks are now and sort of who they're chasing and how they're going to get to that level. And you're right. The speed and the skill of the team like the Leafs and the Oilers, obviously. And then there are teams that didn't make the playoffs but you know have these good young talent bases in Carolina, and I think at some point Arizona will get things figured out too. Like the Canucks are playing catch up, but you can't go back in time. And I think to myself, they let Sean Matthias walk, they let Radim Verbata walk, and Dan Hamhuis. Like all three of those should have been turned into some sort of asset that is helping this hockey team right here, right now.
Well, and that was talking about Linden and the press conference that he had there. One of the things that stuck out to me was when he said, like, I've never been more positive about the team than I am right now. Like on the day we fired Willie, I've never been more positive. And then I'm thinking, like, if you really believe that, that means you knew what a lot of us knew, that things looked bleak for the Canucks even after they made the playoffs and lost in the first round. And if you knew then that things were bleak, you should have been a lot like, I wrote stories heading into that draft about trading Verbata now. Now is the time to trade Verbata at the draft. Now is the time to trade Hamhuis right now. And the counter to that, that people have brought to my, you know, said like, you can't start peeling away useful guys from a team that just had 100 points and made the playoffs. You can if you realize that that team was a fraud and they were on their way down and it was an illusion and things weren't going to be sustained. Like that's when you make super aggressive moves to improve. And if Trevor is now saying like, now I'm super positive, then I knew we were doomed. Then why didn't you make moves to get prospects then? And one of the points that someone made to me was that about, you know, the dual purposes, we're going to retool and try to compete at the same time. And they said, you know, I wonder how much impact that 2014 draft had when Jim looked at it and saw they had the two first round picks, right? They had a high one, with their own pick and they had one, down the lineup that they had,
Anaheim, the Kessler deal,
the Anaheim pick. So I can see a scenario where he looked at those two first round picks and thought, you know what? We can do it both ways. We can get two really good players right now in this draft. I'm going to outsmart everyone and get like two excellent players. And we're going to be competitive for the playoffs. The thing is, if that was the way they were working and if that was the kind of the one of the turning points, it could have worked if they got the right guys, right? Like if they had got Nylander, Ehlers top, and Pastrnak late, they would have been set. They would have been able to do the two things at the same time. Unfortunately, it didn't break their way.
No, and again, you just look at, I mean, it's great for hockey. It's not great for hockey fans in Vancouver, but just so many good young players, probably never more good young players making an impact in these playoffs. And, you know, Fiala scores last night, the overtime goal for...
Drafted after? Richie score, drafted after.
Exactly, yes.
It's almost a drinking game now. Anytime someone drafted after Jake Virtanen scores, take a shot. Yeah. You would have been wasted last night.
Oh, no doubt. And so, again, like the Canucks, in a vacuum, they can like their prospect pool all they want, but then you start to broaden out and you look at what other teams have, and they are playing catch-up, and they have a ton of ground to make up. And as we've talked about on a number of occasions, you know, it's not looking 10 years out, like the primes of these guys, they come into their primes younger than they ever have before. So you're looking at a 5-year window. Like, are they going to match up with the Leafs and the Oilers 5 years from now? No. Like, so how do they get, like, it's a hell of a job for the Vancouver Canucks to think and figure out how to get from here to not just being competitive, but to being a championship caliber hockey club.
Yeah, they need, obviously they need Vertanen to work out. And he may. I mean, he may. Right, but yep. I don't think you can count on him or expect him to be a top six guy that scores 25 a year for 10 years. But he may be fine. He may be get that Yannick Hansen 15 goal a season. They need Yoel Levy to work out. And they need to draft like elite players this time and again next year. And if they do all of those things, you know, maybe they do have a shot in a few years, but it's really hard, like, to have a great team. And I just picked recently, like, one team out of the hopper, like the Bruins. And they had up front, they had Chara, who's a top five defenseman of the last 20 years. They had Bergeron, who's arguably the best defensive forward of the decade. Like, he could win the Selke every year. And they had Tim Thomas, who was like ungodly that season, insane. Right. Like, those were their elite three. And then underneath that, right, they had Marchand, they had Lucic, they had Krejci, and they had a group of others. And then I'm thinking, well, like, do the Canucks even have a Krejci right now? Like, I guess maybe, you know, you can hope that Horvat turns into that. But right now, they don't even have guys that can slot into that second layer, let alone in a few years, guys who are going to be those elite top players that often almost always lead championship teams.
Yep. And that Bruins team, you know, Mark Recchi and Michael Ryder were veterans. They're productive in the playoffs for them. You know, the Canucks don't have, like, they're veteran
guys.
You
can get those guys, right? You can find
those guys. You can, but, you know.
Getting the elite guys and that second tier of really good players, that's what's tough.
Right. But just my point is, like, yes, you can go and find those veteran guys, but you're probably not going to find them as PTOs at the start of training camp, you know, and the fact that they had three guys on a PTO at their training camp showed you just how little depth they had. You know, they had to bring in three guys that were trying to prolong their NHL careers, and, you know, Jack Skilly gave them what he could. I don't have any problem with the season that Jack Skilly had, but you can't be bringing three PTO guys. Like, you should have enough within your system, one, two PTO, but three guys on PTOs was way too many. But right then, I mean, that to me was a signal of just how little depth the Vancouver Canucks had at the outset of their training camp. Willie D, does he get another head coaching job in the NHL?
Oh, man, I don't know. I thought he did a really good job in the first year. And I think if you look at all the injuries that they had, I did find it funny that, you know, at some points they say the injuries were really costly. And then when it was brought up, the injury thing was brought up to Lyndon, like, why do so many guys get hurt? He goes, well, I mean, half of our injuries were Rodin, Dorsett, Gudbranson. And those three guys are not impact guys, but I'm going to say yes. I'm going to say that Willie D somewhere gets another 2-year off, prove it off, or like one more chance. I don't think he's going to get another 4-year deal. But he may get one more shot. Someone may take sympathy on him for the roster. The first year was really good. Like, there was not a critical word from that start of the season until the playoffs started. Like, we were all like, yes, this is the way it's supposed to be. The power play had great movement. They were creating backdoor plays with Verbati. It was wide open. The Sedins were playing less, and we were all applauding that because of what had happened under Tortorella. And the Sedins were thriving because of it. And the playoffs started, the Sedins are playing like 15 minutes, and it's all been downhill since then.
It is crazy when you look at how bad the Canucks were offensively these last 2 years, 186 and 178 or whatever it finished with this year. That first year under Willie D, like 240 some goals. Like, they scored goals.
They played fast too. They were aggressive. They had four, like, I asked him about this. Like, that to me is always how I think of Willie's teams. Like, four kind of balanced lines as much as he can. Teams that are super aggressive. They come at you. It's a multiple player forecheck and they score. And I said, like, did you ever feel like you lost yourself over these past couple of years? And he said, like, he wouldn't cop to that, but he did say, you know, I did not coach the same. I changed the way I coached. And one of the guys that they brought in to change that was Doug Jarvis. And I do find it interesting that Doug Jarvis is the guy that they keep. So if they do bring a young guy on, like, is it going to be Doug Jarvis's systems again with Travis Green or Kruger or whoever else you can pick?
I hope not. If he was, and we were led to believe he was the power play guy this year, that like was, Perry Pern had you know, his fingerprints on the power play in years gone by, but this year it was Doug Jarvis that was supposed to be bringing in a fresh set of eyes. And
that was like, that was just, and it just reminded me at the end of last season when I ran into Willie and said, like, and one of the points he made was, you know, I look at the points that you guys talk about, like changes I could make on the power play that you guys are always asking me about. And sometimes I wish I had made some of those changes. Like, I wish that I had done things differently. But guess what? When the year started, he did all the same stuff again. And he can talk all he wants now or at the end of the year thinking, yeah, I have regrets. There are things I could have done differently. Bullshit. You would, if the season, if he was still the coach in October, Brandon Sutter would be the right shot trigger man. It would be a 1-3-1 on the power play. It would be all the same things. He can't get out of his own way. Like, he can't see, to him, for whatever reason, he can't see that Berchi thrived because you gave him a spot with Horvat and you left him there. And Horvat went through a 38-game stretch at the beginning of last season, first half of the season. It was like winning 27 games without a goal, 38 games with two goals. And he just kept pouring him minutes, 16, 17 minutes, and he was getting his head kicked in possession-wise. Didn't matter. Willie kept playing him. He can't see that it was through opportunity that those guys thrived, not through, you know, him being hard on them, making them earn it. And for whatever reason, he keeps pointing out, look at Trampkin, look at Stetcher, look at Horvat, look at Berchi. I'm looking at them, Willie, and you gave them all a chance. You gave them a chance. And you didn't do that with others.
You're so clever, Jason. did anybody get Trampkin? Somebody should have got Trampkin to step on a stale. It should have been like a way out instead of a way in. Like, you know, first day at camp, he'll do the way in. But there should have been an exit, like,
right,
scale there for Trampkin so that we all had the same number. You remember, that was so much intrigue about the number. What was he?
You know what? Because the translator was there, and that would have been, if I was thinking properly that day, that would have been a great, like, I could have at least asked him how much weight did he, like, Nikita, a big topic this season has been your weight at the beginning of the year. How much did you lose? 2 pounds, maybe you'd say. I don't know. Like, he looks the same to me.
He does. Like,
yeah. It doesn't look like Virtanen. You know what I mean? Virtanen lost 20 pounds, and you can tell he lost 20 pounds.
Your Blue Jays are not off to a good start.
No, we're not talking about the Jays, are we? We've got to talk about your trip to New York. I mean,
what do you want to know? Because I know you're going.
I'm going, and it was funny,
like,
enough,
it was like a scouting mission.
I have the same trip that you had, except I think your wife dragged you to New York, kind of, and I'm dragging, like, Fish is playing there for 13 nights at Madison Square Garden, so I'm going to go see three of these shows, bringing my wife with me, and so I need, like, I'm there a week, and so on the other nights that I'm not dragging her to the Fish concerts, I need to find ways to make her extremely happy. So one of those ways is one of the Broadway shows. I'm at torn which one to go. You saw quite a few, I think. I did. Saw Phantom.
Yeah, well,
and you saw Wicked.
Right.
And you saw Kinky Boots.
Well, I did, yeah.
You saw Chicago, maybe.
No, there's a Cirque du Soleil musical. Oh, right. Paramore. And we've established, anybody that's a longtime listener to the podcast knows that, you know, music isn't necessarily
my thing. That was one of the big shocking revelations of this season. It still sticks with me. You do not listen to music.
Yeah, well, you go swimming in Okanagan lakes and fresh water and stuff, and that stuck with me from day one of this whole thing. I'm not big in, like, freshwater swimming and music.
Right.
But this was my wife. It was her birthday trip. She basically got to call the shots and what we did and where we went. And so we did all the touristy things. I hadn't been to New York City in 15 years. She had never been. People that have been there know. People that haven't, you got to get there at some point. Like, it really is a terrific city. Like, in a city that doesn't sleep, that's true. We stayed just off Times Square. You know, it's April on a Tuesday and a Wednesday in early April. At midnight and 1 a.m. Times Square, there's probably 30,000 people just milling about in Times Square. Like, I don't know what they're doing there. I don't know what we were doing there, but we were part of it. You get caught up in the scene. But yeah, we four musicals, including two on one day. We saw
you did the double bill?
A Phantom matinee. Yes.
Wow. The final day.
Well,
that's got to get you major points at home. Like, two musicals in one day.
Yeah, we did Phantom matinee and then Kinky Boots at night. And
wow. Was it tough to get through that? Like how?
Well, yeah. So this is how my brain works, right? I'm sitting there, and again, music's not necessarily my thing, but I'm blown away. Like, this is Broadway. Like, these are the best performers in the world, right?
Right.
And like, I am blown away by talent in anything at that level. Because I can't sing, and because music isn't that big a deal to me, I'm sitting there and I'm watching, and I'm like, damn, like, these guys and girls are, they're unbelievable. But then my mind would wander, and I have this recurring theme, and I took some shit from my wife, because after each performance, and there are four different theaters, so we're sitting in different parts of these theaters, and this thought crosses my mind, could I throw a baseball from my seat to the stage? So, like, they're in the middle of the big musical number, and I'm thinking, could I get a baseball there? Like, and if so, like, what would happen? It's a dark theater. They wouldn't know where it came from. Like, I wouldn't want to hurt somebody. But I just think, like, what if a baseball just came flying out of nowhere into the middle of Phantom?
Wow.
Or Wicked.
That's amazing.
And then I'd snap back and I'd pay attention to the. But afterward, I'd say to my wife, like, okay, where were you? Could I? And, no, you couldn't get a bait. I was like, no, of course we could. Like, just like we're, you know, on the upper deck with some gravity, like some help there. The ball would fly further. That's how my brain works.
Oh my God.
So, and these shows are like, they're terrific, but, and they're fast. Like, they're 2 hours in and out. Like, right. So, you know, it's not like they drone on for 3.5.
2 hours is long, though, for a musical. Like, that's.
Well, there's an intermission in all of them.
Yeah, but that only. So I'd rather get it all. I'd rather there not be an intermission and then you're all done in an hour and a half or something. Like, I'd rather save the time.
So when you go, I need to know, you look at the theaters you're in and you think, you know, a guy with an average arm played some baseball right. Growing up. You know, from the upper deck, could I get a baseball? And yeah. Some of the theaters were big, and it would have been a chore. But some of them were small and more intimate. Absolutely. Like, I could pick my spot. Not only could I get a ball to the stage, like, I could pick my target, probably. So, but we had a blast. It was good. It was short, three nights, 4 days. And did all the touristy things, Empire State Building, Top of the Rock, the Rockefeller Center.
So if I take
Central Park, we did museums. Boat cruise. We did a boat cruise.
Boat cruise.
Past Statue of Liberty.
Boat captain.
Yeah.
How was that? Was that, is that a must do on my list? Should that be on my list?
It was good. Yeah. It was, down around.
I can
the
get
bottom.
That done in an hour.
Can do the hour long. You could take the all kinds of options. You can do the 2.5.
Am I
hour.
With a bunch of people or who am
yeah,
I?
Yeah, no, it's not like
packed.
A private. It's yeah, it was pretty busy.
Like I'm with like 100 people or
yeah, right. Yeah. But it was good. I mean, it was a view that you weren't going to get elsewhere. Otherwise, there were other boat tours that you know they under the bridge. Like what? I don't need to go under bridges. I live in a city with a bunch of bridges. No. I've been over and under all of the bridges here in Vancouver.
On the under the bridge.
Yeah,
tour.
Yeah, I didn't need the under the bridge tour, but. Museums and Central Park, and we're going to ride bikes through Central Park.
Did you do that?
No.
That's another thing I'm looking at.
No, the weather
rent
wasn't.
The bikes with the wife.
Yeah,
no.
We talked about it.
Could you see that being worth it, though, for the...
Yeah, well, I mean, the city is flooded with, like, those city bike rentals.
Right.
They're everywhere. So, you know, you don't have to go out of your way. Like, they're at the subway stops. You just grab them and go. So we were going to, but the weather wasn't great, and then we decided to... do some other a museum. I think we did a two museum day. We had a two museum day,
wow.
A two musical day.
Wow.
Again, I was just, yes, it was all book collecting
Dude,
points.
You put in time, man.
Yes, I know.
You went to work.
I know.
Holy cow. I don't know if I can do that. I definitely would never do the two Broadway shows in a day, man. That is super impressive. That's one of the, I'm really impressed by that.
The 9/11 memorial. Pretty heavy, as you can understand, you can imagine.
Oh, yeah.
The room with the jumpers that, like, you know, there's everything that happened that day, but they've got this sort of big warning, you know, that this part of the museum isn't for everybody. And you go in and they've got a little walled off section with pictures of all the people that were jumping out of the towers and room of all of the victims. I mean, there's this giant memorial room with 3,500 photos, and it's pretty hard to get through without that getting to you. So,
wow. How long is that?
A couple
experience?
Hours. Yeah. So, no, all in all, it was a good trip.
Man. And so Wicked would be, if I take my wife to that, that's going to be.
Is this what the podcast has come
super
to now?
Pleasing.
Hockey talk and musical reviews and recommendations.
Yeah. I need to know because I'm debating like Wicked or Book of Mormon. And
Wicked was pretty good.
I
liked Wicked. I did. I have to admit, I liked Wicked.
All right.
Yeah. I liked the Bad Witch. Yeah. Okay. There's the Bad Witch and the Good. I won't give it away. I don't want to spoil it, but I sided with the bad witch, so. But maybe that says more about me than...
your dark, cold heart.
Exactly. But no, we had fun. Ran into Sergio on the street. You saw that photo.
Oh, shit, that's right. Like, yeah. What was that? That photo of Sergio walking around with his green jacket, just cruising around Manhattan?
Yeah. Like, so in the last few years, they've done that. The Masters champ win on a Sunday. They fly him to New York. They... You know, ring the opening bell of the stock exchange. They take him up Empire State Building for photos. And they do all the media rounds. Like, just, you know, he hits it hard. And it's funny because that morning, the Tuesday morning, our first day there, we flew in on the Monday night. Tuesday morning, turn on the TV in the hotel, and there's Sergio doing one of the, you know, network morning, CBS Good Morning or whatever this morning. And so it reminded me that he was in town, but we certainly weren't staking him out. There was no kind of stalking of Sergio. And late in the afternoon, you know, there's no quiet streets in Midtown New York, but my wife and I were cruising along, heading to the theater district to get some tickets for the show that night. And we're just walking along, and these doors fly open. And Sergio and his girlfriend bounding down the stairs. He's got a couple handlers. They stay at the top of the stairs, and they're saying their goodbyes to whoever. I think he was his final media appearance of the day.
Yeah.
Sergio and his girlfriend are just, they're standing on the sidewalk in front of us. Like, nobody there. And I said to my wife, I said, holy crap. She said, who's that? Who's that? Like, who wears a green jacket, you know, 2 days after he's won the Masters? And she knows. She knows Sergio Garcia. Anyways, I was just like, take a picture. And look, you do this. I do this for a living. I'm not starstruck. Like, if it was a hockey player, I'd probably, whatever.
Yeah.
But 2 days after the guy's Masters win, and he's wearing his green jacket.
No, that photo he's right was there. Awesome.
Like, I honestly almost crashed into him. And so I just congratulated him. I said, hey, great job. Happy for you. Can I get a picture? And he obliged. Looks
super happy.
Yeah,
with you,
exactly.
Man.
So it was just kind of a kick on our first day in New York to run into and almost run over Sergio Garcia.
I can't even, like, how many people must have asked. Like, because he's walking. It's not like he's. Like, wouldn't you take the green jacket off if you were going to be.
You'd think so, but I
cruising
think
around the, Manhattan?
Like, but they brought him out the back door, I think, to avoid any sort of crowd.
So he could have got his car right
and
there.
And his car was right there. It was waiting for him. And it was between the building and basically the length of a New York City sidewalk. And we just kind of were right there. And so had to get the snapshot. So
it was good.
Good little souvenir,
good.
Yes. All right, PatCast for the first one of the offseason.
That's right.
So we'll see what happens here. There's going to be a coach. There's going to be the expansion. There's obviously into the draft. And we'll find our way to plow through all of this as the offseason unfolds. I don't think it's going to be a terribly busy offseason. Like last year, they had the money into the market. I'm not expecting a whole lot there. Look, the big news is going to be how many PTOs are they going to offer. And it better be under three. Let's just go with that. They can't bring three guys back.
The big news is going to be your goal predictions in August. That's what. That's the clamoring locally.
Well,
you know,
set a countdown clock, and we'll work our way to that. PatCast, as always, brought to you by Eagle Ridge GM and Coquitlam. They're proud sponsors of community hockey. Eagle Ridge GM, your one-stop car and truck center where everyone's a part of their hockey family. Check them out online if you're in the market for a vehicle. Start your search at EagleRidgeGM.com. Box, as always, appreciate it. Good to get back into the podcasting machine with you. This is PatCast on Province Radio.